Good evening and welcome to the regular meeting of the Board of Directors of the Town of Discovery Bay. I'd like to open the meeting now to all rise and make a pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
President Still.
Here.
Vice President Pease.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Lee.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Well, good evening and welcome. Looking forward to the holidays. At this time, we'll open public comment. Public comments will be limited to a 3-minute time limit. During public comments, the public may address the board on any issues within the district's jurisdiction, which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda that at the time the item is before the board for consideration. All commenters will come and speak from the front of the room at the podium. Is there any public comment? All right, I'll close public comment. At this time, we'll move on to item C, presentations, groundwater sustainability plan update. General Manager.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I've asked Tom Nelson from our engineering firm, Blue Earth and Scotland, to come here this evening and give the board an update on efforts that we've been working with in our East County water conservation, water sustainability, groundwater sustainability group. And so Tom, as the presentation, is going to give you about what's been going on. As you know, I've been attending a number of meetings on this subject, and I certainly can't speak to the technical abilities as well as Tom can, so Tom is here to do that for you.
So I have about a dozen slides and take about 12, 15 minutes, and wanted to, as Rick said, give you an update, or Rick had asked me to give you an update on some things that have been going on with groundwater sustainability and particularly as they affect Discovery Bay. So just to get your bearing, you know, when myself or somebody from our firm has come to make presentations to you, we've been mainly concerned with things like, the water master plan or urban water management plan, and those have to do primarily with wells and sort of the geologic conditions within Discovery Bay. So this legislation, though, that came out in 2014 changes the whole picture of how we need to consider things. So in this case, the legislation requires that management and everything that's technical, everything that you consider in planning with groundwater supply, it has to be done on a groundwater basin scale. And so in this picture shows the approximate location of Discovery Bay within the Tracy Subbasin. And the Tracy Subbasin is a subpart of the greater San Joaquin groundwater subbasin. So we're even a subset of a larger subbasin. But the legislation requires that everybody, that entity that's dealing with groundwater within that subbasin, they have to plan it on that particular scale. So one of the things that, and I think you've probably heard these terms, but you'll hear them tonight and then for a long time, and that has, those terms are groundwater sustainability agencies and groundwater sustainability plans. And with respect to the Tracy Subbasin, a groundwater sustainability plan is going to be required under the legislation. The subbasin has a medium priority, which puts it on a time schedule of preparing a plan by 2022, and that Discovery Bay would need to or should engage with or form its own groundwater sustainability agency. And you could not opt to not participate or form a groundwater sustainability agency, but you're going to be subject to some other decisions or decision making by other entities that would affect your supply, and I'll get into that in a moment. The legislation also, this goes back to the scale again, requires coordination with other subbasins. So surrounding the Tracy Subbasin are several others that have gotten on the list of critically overdrafted basins in the state. And by virtue of a lack of boundaries or physical separation between those basins, the state would require some interbasin coordination. And Rick and I went to a meeting last week, and I'll go into a little bit more about that. That has to do with that interbasin coordination. Under a groundwater sustainability plan, you have to prepare a groundwater budget on a basin scale. And if you can think of a groundwater budget as simply being an accounting of all the water that comes in and out of the system. And if there's more water leaving the system, then there's a decline in storage, and that equals overdraft. So when you hear about overdraft in the state, it's simply in the way that people are going to quantify that, it's a matter of determining what's coming in, what's going out, and the difference being that change in storage. Throughout the state, these pink areas or purple areas are the critically overdrafted sub-basins. I show an arrow where we're located in East Contra Costa County. We've got directly to the south and directly to the east critically overdrafted sub-basins. In those sub-basins, without doubt, going forward, in order to satisfy the legislation, there's going to have to be reduced groundwater pumping over historic levels. So that means allocation of groundwater pumping within those purple areas to solve things like declining water levels and subsidence. So immediately south of us in the Delta Mendota sub-basin is an area where there's a lot of subsidence, and then further as you go south, say around Kettleman City and the Tulare Lake bed, declining water levels by up to a couple hundred feet. So there's large problems in as far as the state goes. They're mainly in the southern San Joaquin Valley. We're again not critically overdrafted. We're considered a medium priority in terms of the way the state legislation is set up to require certain things like the groundwater sustainability plan. Is there going to be a concern with overdraft in our area? So this is a slide from the Integrated Regional Water Master Plan that you participated in. And the legislation requires that you look at a 50-year planning horizon. So the main concern we have today is not what's happening currently or 5 years, 10 years, but over 50 years, could there be a point where we reach an overdrafted condition? More is going out than is coming in. And so it's just something that's going to have to be seriously addressed. And the state requires milestones that have objectives, and you have to submit reports every 5 years to show that you're on a path to either maintain sustainability or achieve it. So in our case, we're trying to maintain it, and so we're not like the purple areas I just showed you in the previous slide where you actually have to cut back things. So we're not anywhere near that. However, there is a concern with what a groundwater sustainability agency, the authorities that are granted those, and I list those here, and it's pretty significant. It's very new. A groundwater sustainability agency, for example, under items 1 through 4, they can determine for the good of the sub-basin that there needs to be certain spacing requirements of wells. So for example, we might locate wells within Discovery Bay to satisfy your water distribution system, but somebody else might say that spacing's too close, we think you're over-pumping the area, we're going to now impose additional restrictions on your ability to put wells where you think you need them. Again, that's not what we're facing today because we're not one of those critically overdrafted sub-basins. Number two, really important in a lot of areas, these GSAs can regulate, limit, or suspend extractions from wells. So they can, within their area, they can tell somebody first of all, they'll have meters on those wells, and they'll enforce these actions through reporting and may require reduction in pumping or shutting it down completely, either individual wells or wells in aggregate. So if you're a water district or a city, there may be restrictions on your ability to pump up to historic levels. Other things 3 and 4 have to do with transfers and how we move water around to solve problems and accounting rules. But the important thing of these GSAs is they're the authority that's granted under this legislation. So who can be a GSA? The legislation sets up that, or is designed to allow or maintain local authority. And so by definition, there's a definition of a local agency, which is any agency that has is involved in water planning, as a water purveyor, land use planning. And within our area, the Tracy Subbasin, again, East Contra Costa County, this would include Discovery Bay, Brentwood, and all these on the list. And I ordered these according to the reliance on groundwater as a source of supply. Town of Discovery Bay, you're 100% reliant on groundwater. Brentwood used to be. Now they get a portion of their water from surface water. There's a lot of small community systems, private ag, private domestic. Diablo Water District has a supplements surface water source with groundwater, and then Brian Bethany, East Contra Costa, and Contra Costa County use no groundwater. Or I take it back, they have well, the two irrigation districts do use wells to supplement. And but the importance of sort of local authority and what Rick and I have talked about and what Rick's what we're trying to accomplish by staying active in these meetings about GSA formation is to recognize that Discovery Bay should take a strong role in this because of the possible authorities of GSAs and by virtue of your 100% reliance on groundwater. So it's really important. You don't want to sit back and have other people make decisions going forward about how you use groundwater. In the Tracy Subbasin, which is this whole colored area, there are three sub-areas that are somewhat geographic, and I think also there's some physical differences between them. So in the green is the East Contra Costa County area. No historic adverse conditions. We think that the data shows that we've been sustainable in groundwater use. The pinkish area directly to the east, the delta, is largely served as agriculture, largely served by surface water. And then to the south, though, in San Joaquin, and that's the pink area is San Joaquin County. The other portion of the subbasin is also San Joaquin County, and I'll call it the Tracy area. There have been some water quality impacts, but more importantly, and I guess that's been the sort of the stimulus or the basis for some recent meetings with the basin, the San Luis Delta Mendota Water Authority in the basin directly to the south, has member agencies, including the city of Tracy, in this purple area, and they're concerned about managing an overdrafted basin to the south, but also their connection to the southern Tracy subbasin. So that's a big concern because San Joaquin County has mapped or knows that there's communication between that, the Tracy area and these overdrafted subbasins, and they really do have to coordinate under the legislation. There's no evidence that we have a strong connection that the East County area with the South, and that's going forward as a basis for seeking a boundary or maybe asking DWR, the State Department of Water Resources, to reclassify this basin and have the East County area be its own sub-basin, and that would sort of like separate us from some of the issues that are arising with the agencies to the south. This is a slide that was shown at the meeting that Rick and I went to a week ago, and this gives you a sense of how many different agencies are involved. The green area is the central and south delta water agencies. The real hot area is really to the south. There's a number of basins that are connected or member agencies that are members of the San Luis Delta Mendota Water Authority. They want to coordinate. They actually need to coordinate. And in the meeting that we went to, there was a sense that they wanted to have the Tracy subbasin, including all the East County, Contra Costa County people, sort of be under one GSA and ultimately prepare a groundwater sustainability plan, kind of be one happy family and make One United threat to the state in terms of how to manage groundwater. This seemed a little crazy to me, and I think the history and the experience in the Contra Costa area, because historically groundwater conditions have not been similar. There's no connection, there's no movement of groundwater between them that's been identified. There's no transfer of surface water back and forth between the areas. And I think one of the things that came out of the meeting, especially since San Joaquin County decided that they wanted to, or that agency wanted to assert itself and possibly be a GSA, it became clear that the Contra Costa group, including Discovery Bay, and with Contra Costa County saying that they would just support the local water agencies, so Discovery Bay, Brentwood, Diablo Water District, and whatever they wanted to do, we had a much cleaner situation. They said, well, they agreed that it made sense that that group pursue its own management approach, and so that sort of put to rest maybe the potential conflicts that could arise with somebody from the south trying to assert sort of a management authority over the entire sub-basin. So I think we're past that. That's been a concern for quite a while, and that was, I think, a good resolution, at least going forward where we're at. Some of the timelines, even though, you know, the state just came out with guidelines on creating a GSA, you ultimately don't have to file until June 30th, 2017. However, if multiple GSAs or multiple local agencies file to become one and there's overlap, it could take a long time to resolve those overlaps. And so people are trying to establish those GSAs now so that they can start the planning process. And I think that's what's happening today with the local agencies within the Contra Costa, East Contra Costa County. Ultimately, since the Tracy Subbasin and anything that we envision going forward, we would need to be under a groundwater sustainability plan by 2022. Again, medium priority as far as the state's concerned. There shouldn't be any plan that starts talking about regulating groundwater and reducing groundwater use in this area because there's no evidence of overdraft today. That's not the case with many parts of the valley, and those are the areas where there's going to be significant issues, including possible adjudications, you know, court resolutions of things if they can't come to an agreement. I think that's not the case where, in East Contra Costa County, and I envision we're already 7 or 8 months into developing a good technical foundation to present the state as far as a plan, and if we're successful, maybe a change in the boundary so that we are our own sub-basin. And I just finished with, I think you saw this slide last month, but it's one that we've shown the state and will continue to. It tells us kind of the story in one slide of the dark solid line showing groundwater use or water use by Discovery Bay from 87 to present, so a period of growth and flattening and water levels early in the development, and stable conditions today. And it's much like a reservoir. If a reservoir will fluctuate with use, but as long as there's not a long-term decline, then we can make a claim to sustainability. And that's exactly the way a groundwater aquifer system works. If groundwater levels are stable and you don't have degraded water quality, then there's really not much of a case to be made for not being sustainable. So. That's the slides that I had. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
On the on that last slide where you showed the wells and then you showed the demand of water, mm-hmm. How does that, couldn't quite get it. I saw it, you know, you identified the different wells by the X's and the red box and the blue box.
Yeah.
That's how much water each of those wells is producing in a given year?
No, the blue line is the production. So on the over here is 200 million. So back in the beginning, when we were first developing demand is about 200 million, peaked somewhere between 12 and 1300 million gallons a year. So that's what's seen here. And then this is, again, imagine a staff gauge on a lake or something. So this is water elevation. And so water elevations, when we're using a little bit of water, fluctuate seasonally in this range. As we grew and started using more water, they fluctuated in this range. As we flattened, they continue to fluctuate, but we're stable or actually a little higher. Why are we a little higher? Not sure entirely, but it would have to do with others around us and just other, there's a lot of other factors that we're trying to sort through. But this is the sort of the starting point with describing conditions in Discovery Bay and your water use. So in other words, if somebody made a claim that, hey, I think Discovery Bay is harming the aquifer system, your growth, how you're managing things, this would be the first thing I'd put up and say, well, show me the harm. Because it's what we see is sort of a natural progression. Any aquifer system, when you first start to use water, starts as you increase, you'll see some decline. And then what you look for is whether that continues to decline in, like chronically, and indicate that you have exceeded some safe yield or sustainability, or have we stabilized? And I would argue that we're tracking these now. This box shows the most recent levels, which are certainly higher than they were a few years ago. So we do see evidence that things are stable in this area.
And also, from what I can see up there, which I think is probably good news, but we're back at 2005 levels of consumption too, right?
Yeah, so that's only going to
make a case for
exactly, and in fact, that's probably the last 2 years. So this year will probably be even lower than last year. So I expect a little downtick or a flattening of this consumption. So here we were about 1,300 million gallons a year. Now we're below 12, and we're either flat or a little lower. And that probably explains why we're stepping up a little bit. So that's certainly a part of it.
Tom, we have any idea or any way to know what sort of the natural recharge is of the groundwater basin?
We think that Discovery Bay is like Brentwood and Oakley are part of the Marsh Creek, Kellogg Creek watersheds. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, first of all, the source of all groundwater is going to be precip.
Right.
And the question is how much of it is directly from our watershed, or Discovery Bay's case, we've got some deeper formations that may be taking it from the south and maybe ultimately back at the Sierras. So there's multiple sources, and at least this would be evidence that we haven't exceeded that recharge. It's probably multiple sources, though. And on the other hand, I would say as you get closer to Brentwood or even Oakley, it's probably less from other sources. It's probably more directly from that watershed. Where we're located, I think it's probably a combination. It's not only the local watershed, but there's probably some from the south and then southeast. Mm-hmm.
The results are also recharging there.
Well, you'd first of all, we the delta plays a role, but mainly in the shallow aquifer. Okay. So we've got clay layers between us and where we're pumping from. If there was a strong connection with the delta, we'd have some water quality issues. And so I think our water quality has been stable. Water levels have been stable. I think it suggests that we're probably immune to what the direct outflow of the delta, but certainly at some point there is a connection between what you see at the surface and in groundwater. That connection may be way distant, way at the source, like the Sierras, the snow melt, and when it first comes into the valley and gets into the ground.
But that clay cap is preventing
that clay cap is exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. If I can go on show, go back to this one slide here next time. This slide is the group in East Country Costa County that I've been working with and Tom has been contracted to work with. The five agencies that are part of, that are the driving force of this, besides ourselves, are including ourselves, are Brentwood, Yaba Water, BBIB, and East Country Costa Irrigation District. since this whole thing started and when Tom came to you last and gave a presentation kicking this off, City of Antioch and the county and Contra Costa County were not part of it.
Yeah, the water district. I should have had
Contra Costa Water District
on there.
It should be on there also. Yeah. And so it's grown a little bit, but I can tell you that the five agencies are unified in their goals to make sure that it's the five that literally drive the bus. And Tom has been doing a great job of doing the technical work on that. And from the five general managers that represent those different districts, I can tell you that we were relieved last Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday afternoon, and the battle that's going to be taking place in San Joaquin County on this very subject for this very same sub-basin is going to be monumental. And I asked our county representative that was there whether or not Contra Costa County was going to be going off in that direction. The response was absolutely not. They just want to monitor what's taking place, so they don't have any interest in forming any battle lines, which are taking place in San Joaquin. And that was really interesting. We all just kind of sat back and watched the battle take place. And then
just struggling over who's going to gain control?
Yeah. And because the county's going to be moving, San Joaquin is moving forward with their GSA next month.
At their next meeting.
At their next meeting. Yeah. And it threw all the other agencies, BBID, Delta Mendota, kind of threw them all for a loop. So it was really interesting. So I'm glad that's working out in our favor.
Yeah. Well, BBID is one of the agencies that are in this five, even though there are more in San Joaquin County. How they kind of lean towards us versus having to go the other direction?
Two different groups. Just two. They'll be in a group on the southern side, and they'll be in a group on the Contra Costa side. They'll have their hat on both sides. They don't have any groundwater resources right now, and
not in our region.
Anywhere. They do in
San Joaquin. That's what I thought. Yeah.
But they don't have any groundwater in Contra Costa County. I think they just want to preserve their rights.
Are you engaged by some of the other five agencies too?
No, just for this. I mean, actually, we're doing some well work on a well we designed a number of years ago with Diablo. Nothing with East County, nothing with BBID. They're not really, well, East County, East Contra Costa Irrigation District does have wells. We're not. So, no, the answer is no.
No.
Yeah, I think over the years, when we met about a year ago, Rick, we had an informational meeting. I think somebody from the southern part of the basin came and made a presentation. And then we had a follow-up meeting. And our firm has worked with all of the agencies over the years. So we do have a lot of in-house sort of background that seemed to make sense to, you know, draw on that. In fact, for the same agency, we had done a study in 99, which is the only, even today, the only sort of hydrogeology study of this particular area. It's always been to the south. The studies have always been with the Tracy and then Mendota area, because that was sort of the hub of surface groundwater supplies and interactions. So I think that was one of the reasons that it made sense, and you know, we were gratified to have the opportunity to work with them. But we've worked on projects for all of them.
All right. Yeah. The focus of this project here is pretty much 100% of what we're doing.
Yes.
Needed.
Yeah. All right. For sure.
That's awesome. Great. Thanks for the update. That's great news. Moving on, we'll move on to President's Report and Director's Comments. Anybody?
I know President.
No, the fire district did accept the offer and for the short-term funding to open up a force station for approximately 17 months under conditions that were implied. So that process of rehiring and trying to get our force station will occur. And the grassroots, I was at a meeting today at 2:00 with some of the guys that are trying to put together this grassroots educational process to try to engage the public in a longer short-term goal to get more stations open. That's all I got.
Which station are they opening?
Knights.
Anything for our gentlemen? All right, good deal. Thank you. I move on. Consent calendar.
Make the motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Moving on to business and action items. Number one, amending parks usage and rental policy. Chairman Manager.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item is coming before you this evening for a couple of reasons. One, it was obviously left off, but we did our updates to it. That being gambling prohibitions in our recreational and our park facilities. And so in reviewing our park policies, it became clear that there was not a prohibition in that in our rules. And so this just clears that up and cleans that up, just to make certain that everybody knows that gambling is prohibited in our parks and in our recreational facilities. So that is the, there's an update resolution, update policy that takes care of that.
Are they still playing bingo here?
They have not played bingo here for quite some time.
They being the community
foundation
and it went, that it went not on being
for
gambling?
About three or four. Rod and I discussed this. That's a different type of a permitting process. And in fact, my initial language included bingo that would allow it. But due to some concerns with us with the town being in conflict with state laws, felt that if there was going to be bingo here, that it would come to the board, and the board would pre-authorize that.
So. Okay, on an individual basis,
yeah.
For individual organization. Okay, thank you.
We took that out.
We took it out, yes.
Yeah, we took that out, so they will not be coming to you for that particular item. So what we put in was that they have an obligation. The gambling laws here in California are odd, right? I mean, you've got the California lottery, you've got 50-50 raffles, you've got bingo, you've got raffle tickets in general, you have the Super Bowl raffle that goes on with every organization. And so what we said and what I asked, or what I made a recommendation to Rick was take out the bingo language that specifically says if they're interested in gambling, they come to you. There's a process that they can go through. There's a state permitting process. We pull it for Ducks Unlimited every year, and you just go get a permit. If they've got that permit and they're complying, then you don't get involved in it. And you don't have to verify whether the permit was accurate. You don't verify whether. So rather than you giving tacit consent to basically say violate state laws, we just took it out completely and made them responsible for the state. So if you look at the page, it's not quite a page, it's page 17 on your PDF. On page 17, it says, Renter agrees that they will comply with all state and local laws, including but not limited to activities that require state or local permit. And gambling activities are just expressly prohibited unless they otherwise pull a permit. So somebody's going to have to jump through some serious hoops to be able to run bingo here, run penny poker, run raffle.
But not hoops they wouldn't have to jump through anyway.
No.
That's correct.
Okay. It just takes us out of the loop.
Takes you out of the loop and puts responsibility.
There's a county process.
But there's a county process as well as a state process.
Right.
And so if they wanted to run that here, it would be on them. And then that way, if they run a bingo without pulling the permit, you didn't give them authorization, you can't be tasked with the responsibility. It goes directly back to the renter. And our agreement that is provided says that they will comply with all state permits. But our general rule is prohibited gambling activities.
And Rod, thank you for correcting that. I was confusing the original draft language, but we ended up finalizing and bringing to the board. So thanks for that correction.
Any public comment? All right, there's no public comment.
Move staff recommendation.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Yeah. Next item, please.
Mr. President, members of the board, at the last board meeting, the board adopted resolution 2015-20 supporting the detachment of Byer Bethany irrigation tax rate areas that overlap into Discovery Bay. And at that meeting, Vice President Pease recommended or suggested that a committee be established in order to monitor that process. If the board would like to move in that direction, that's certainly at your discretion, and that is up to the board. I would make one comment that if you do that, that the committee be established as an ad hoc committee, meaning that it would have a sunset date. When the process is completed, the committee would automatically sunset.
Being that I brought that up, I don't know how the other board members feel, but I would like to get, before we go down this path, I'd like to get a little bit more information as far as how that detachment process works through LAFCO. I'd like to have staff come back and bring us, from a legal standpoint, just kind of a step, not a, you know, a 50-page report by any means, but I think it's not that pressing that we need to do any action today, but to allow staff to get back to us, say, well, here's what we know now, here's what we think we need to know, here's kind of the process that should take place, and that way our representatives, whoever that might be, will have a mission to actually, here's what we're going to try and establish if we spend our time going, etc. So I think we have some time to get that done after the first year or something.
I would agree, and Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to quickly respond to that, I can at least tell you what the status is now. SJ LAFCO, San Joaquin LAFCO, as well as Contra Costa County, and at some point I may have to step out if SJ LAFCO gets it, because I'm general counsel for San Joaquin LAFCO as well. But both LAFCOs received letters, one from Contra Costa and the other from Discovery Bay, just indicating that they were supporting the application process. An application has not been made at this point in time. There's still some question as to who makes that application, whether it's Byron Bethany, and whether they'd be willing to actually make that request for a detachment, whether it's Discovery Bay, or whether the county has standing to actually make that on behalf of Byron Bethany and or Discovery Bay. And then the next question that'll occur once you get a application, the next question occurs is, who's the approving body? At this point in time, I think we're of the opinion it's not San Joaquin County, because the tax rate area and the tax sharing agreement or the moving of dollars is going to be with Contra Costa and not with San Joaquin County. Although BBID is primarily located in San Joaquin County, it doesn't necessarily mean a detachment couldn't be processed through Contra Costa County. In addition, the Cortese Knox, which is a body of law that deals with LAFCO matters, allows the two LAFCO entities to come to some agreement on who is going to process that application, but there may be pushback on that issue as well. So there's lots of time before any of this moves forward. Once they figure out the correct entity, then everybody's going to weigh in on what the legal ramifications are in terms of the money. How does the money get handled, and whether or not it can be directed someplace, or whether or not it becomes just an ad valorem and it gets spread out amongst the rest of the entities that are otherwise were deprived of those funds for those number of years. that being said, if you saw the county resolution, one of the items that was included in it is the county administrator, county auditor, was going to start doing the work to determine whether or not the funds could be directed or dictated in a certain manner. So there's a bunch of steps to still be done. I don't know that there's anything for this board to do at this point in time. At some point in time, somebody's going to come to a conclusion and maybe turn to Discovery Bay and say, you make the application to LAFCO on behalf of BBID.
In your professional opinion, it's 2-3 months down the road?
Yeah, my understanding is Contra Costa County requested that the item be put on the agenda for their next meeting, which I don't know. I didn't look at their schedule as to when their next meeting was with the holidays, and they were supposed to be bringing back two items. One, who would be making the application, and would an application actually be presented to Contra Costa County for them to submit? And the second item that they were supposed to bring back at their next meeting was the evaluation of costs associated with it. So that's supposed to happen at their next meeting. I'm guessing because of the late timing in the season, it would be January before they would even get to that. And then if they make an application, it's probably 30 to 60 days to make that kind of application. And then we're another 30, 60 days before you'd be heard by Alaska. So we're 120, in my opinion, on the
inside. Before things start to move.
Before LAFCO could actually consider it, that's correct.
Okay, so I feel it'd be appropriate for us to.
And I'll know more. I'm in the loop on a daily basis with both LAFCO.
Well, Luann noted to me, I talked to her about this last night, that it would be 180 days once they received the completed application for Contra Costa, once they had landed in their lab. About 180 days for them to take an action. So right, it's going to take a while to get the LAFCO's lab.
Right, but we would want to be engaged prior to that. And actually, I feel a board representation should be at some of those meetings, being there, making some sort of presentation on our behalf, et cetera. So,
yeah, I'd say we know within the next 30 to 60 days whether Discovery Bay is going to be the applicant.
Right, but that I think would be appropriate.
And if you're the applicant, then there may be no need to really have an ad hoc committee because you're all going to be involved. It's going to be it's going to be Discovery Bay's application, Alaska.
All right.
Because of your kind of working on both sides of the county border, my understanding is that it's been discussed that San Joaquin County doesn't really want anything to do with this decision. It's probably going to be deferred over to Contra Costa County. Have you heard the same? No official statement by the San Joaquin County, but
I was just trying to think of the caveat that I was going to give.
Yeah, but it's kind of like they kind of look at it.
Not as legal counsel for San Joaquin County, but my understanding is that's correct.
Yeah. Thank you. It's pretty much rumored innuendo at this point, but I believe that to be true.
And I will say that, you know, from a practical standpoint, not from a legal standpoint,
right,
but from a practical standpoint, as San Joaquin County, I think we're scratching our head going, why are we involved in the process? I understand the location issue, right, and Cortese Knox spelling out that the location, the primary location of the entity that's looking to detach is the primary responsible agency that should be reviewing it, which makes that San Joaquin LAFCO. And what we're having difficulty with is just because the Act says that, you didn't envision when the Act was drafted that you would have this kind of dual representation in terms of detachment. And if you're going to make the application, or Contra Costa is going to make the application, how do you make an application to a jurisdiction that you're not active or participating in at all? So you don't even have any representation on the San Joaquin LAFCO board to protect your interests. So that's why we're kind of shoving it back. If BBID makes the application, however, their primary place of business is San Joaquin County. So that's what we're struggling with. So we're hoping that the two LAFCOs, the two executive directors, will come to some agreement, and that's allowed under Cortese Knox.
Well, maybe it's not the interest of BBID to detach, and it's in our best interest to detach. I've been thinking it would come back to us to make the application.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say that BBID, though, does have an interest in detaching, very much so. They are providing service. They are not providing a service for which they are receiving funds. Inappropriate. In my knee-jerk reaction. And second, the BBID has also pushed the same issue which you have discussed, which is those funds would help other entities, namely Contra Costa Fire District, East Contra Costa Fire District, which is in their interest to have those services provided as well as they're a public entity, you know, under the subdivision of the state of California, so they've got an interest in protecting all of those other entities as well. So I think they do have an interest, whether they're willing to because of the political nature of it, I don't know.
Yeah, but their hands are caught in the cookie jar, public dollars.
Yeah, I want to support Director Pease. You know, we have $600,000 of money that's leaving Discovery Bay residents' pockets here. And I think it's appropriate for Discovery Bay to have a seat at this table, because I know that there's already other groups that have their feelers out to grab that money for someone else. And I think if the money's leaving Discovery Bay, Well, the measure that stays in Discovery Bay.
The money never belonged to Discovery Bay.
That wasn't my point, Your Honor. But my point is the people in Discovery Bay are paying that money for the benefit of the family. At some point, we need to be cognizant of the fact and represent those people that money not be used for areas outside of where the money is.
I'll just say, under no circumstance, without me doing any legal research, under no circumstance would money in this tax area, if the tax dollars have to be paid, go to another tax area that isn't otherwise providing the services. So.
All right, thank you for the information. Let's see, no action. Moving on to item G, informational only items, rotation schedule.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. If the board will scratch the cobwebs out and remember back to last February of this year, the board revised their board, the board officer rotation schedule and put a procedure in place. That procedure takes effect on January the 1st, 2016. Subsequently, the board officers are predetermined. So beginning in 2016, our board officers will be Board President Bill Pease, Vice President Bob Lee, and President Pro Tem Director Graves. Similarly, the board also changed the procedure in which committees are established and how they are structured from an annual to an every 2 year basis. That took effect last year. So there's another year remaining on that schedule. So at this point in time, unless the board determines it's necessary to make changes to either of those procedures and policies, then you certainly have the right to do that, and that's certainly up to your discretion. But barring that, we're going to move forward with the schedule as it is currently outlined, and we're moving forward with it.
Can't roll it back, you guys?
I don't care to do that.
Do you want to roll it back?
Yes.
Everybody's good?
All good.
All right. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks for everybody's support this year. I'm looking forward to next year, too.
I know. It was really cold a minute ago.
And now it just got all
now it's got warm. Really hot.
It's like an inferno in here. If I walk outside, it's freezing, and then I would be sick for a month.
That's a myth.
So we're moving on to IHH Veoli report for the month of November. We need Bernie.
Thank you. Okay, in the month of November, we continue our safe practices, over 3,000 hours of safe work, training for the mind, security trainings along the town. All reports to the state were submitted on time. All wells are running. We produced 50 million gallons of water to the distribution center, to the system. All back T's tests come back negative. You can see here on my chart here, packet was put wrong, I apologize, but you can see around 52 are dropping off as we come into the end of the year. We had about a 37% reduction from 2013, so we still doing a very good job on the water conservation side. Wastewater plant was number three water. We recycled 1.7 MGD at the treatment plant. All wastewater parameters were met well in their limits or violations. No permit excursions. All stations are running. Lift stations are running as in order. And we did do a little flushing last month.
Bernie, can you give the board a quick update on the oxidation ditch 2 and the status of that, as well as an update on PG&E's discharge procedures?
Yeah. Oxidation number 2, the only thing left is that the contractor got some scheduling conflicts with their caulking subcontractor. They were on site today doing their caulking. Where the cracks were, where the cement joints are, that had to be re-caulked, and they were done today. So so they got a cure time, but there's four spots on the bottom of the ox ditch that has to be looked at. And then for the PG&E, tomorrow noon will be, they'll finish their water hauling. They're closing up their project, and their project is scheduled to be closed by Friday. So.
Do you know how many gallons were at?
About 3 million gallons. So I'll have a final total tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, 10 cents a gallon?
Yeah. About $320,000.
I was hoping at 20.
Sweet. That's all going to the, that all goes to the nice, general fund. Yeah, that's nice. Anything, right?
Yeah, perfect. General fund.
We're going to use that. What did you say?
You can buy a nice carport with that.
Actually, we're going to use some of it for that. We're going to recommend that.
Might be walking on a flitz down the street. We may as well look at it every day when you drive by.
We're going to buy a nice plaque for you.
Thank you. You can make it the Mark Simon Memorial.
Oh, no, you're not dead yet, so it can't be memorial.
Well, it can be a living room.
Well, we can arrange that.
Yeah. Just the floor part of it.
Yeah, like that.
Bernie? The
work order backlog is actually aging at 30 of the over 30, which I'm assuming were 60 or 90. Weren't we in a little better shape with the...
It varies about the time, depending on what's going on. It's just that what comes up schedule, like last couple weeks we've been doing annual PMs on lift stations. We have to put all the pumps at all the lift stations. So we got a little done, so that number changed next month. It fluctuates, depends on what's going on. But you should see that going down in December.
That's it. I was going to ask you, towards the end of this year, when we start January of 16, we're going to be a little cleaner then?
Yeah, you will be.
How about, and the other thing I was going to ask you, is this fire hydrant flushing? We just did one?
Well, we don't flush hydrants due to the water conservation because we waste a lot of water. That was just due to, we were doing some sewer flushing, okay. And we had to flush a hydrant to fill the truck up.
Okay.
Bernie, can I ask you a question? Educate me here. I'm looking at the wastewater laboratory analysis and looking at the permits and the results that we have for October, November, which is pretty consistent with what you've shown in the past. My understanding is, you know, that when an influent comes into the plant, the goal is to get as much of the or get pollutants out of that water before you have discharge from the water.
Right.
And it takes our chemicals, process, whatever. If we were allowed to bring those numbers up a little bit, could we save our chemicals?
Well, we don't use no chemicals at this point. Everything's biological, so we don't use no chemicals. And the reason our numbers are so low is because we have extended aeration. That means that all our bacteria is running from 15 to 18 days, so just about everything is eat up. But those aerators are controlled by DO, so as long as we keep maintain a DO level, we only have one or two aerators running. As the DO goes down, more kick on. So as long as we maintain that, everything runs will be up there, and we use minimum. And once we get the full force of plant two running, and have plant one down, you should see a reduction in power.
And in terms of shutting down plant one, as I happen to go by that plant once in a while, it's fragrance, obviously. Very fragrance.
Depends on the winds.
I don't know what kind of cologne you wear, but yeah.
It depends on the prevailing winds.
Opposite of what I meant.
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do there?
Well, of course, you shouldn't have any smell because there'll be nothing there. But we're in the process of transferring everything to plant two, okay. And there will be nothing at plant one.
And when do you get that transfer?
Should be by the end of January.
That's not a permanent closure or permanent trend. It's just a seasonal. And the influent will still be there, and it will still be in operation regardless.
Yeah, the influent pump station is at plant.
And that is a very odorous pump station.
Well, there's some odor control stuff there that we're in the process of upgrading now. We have some new blowers going in, some media change out. But the only thing we run with the influent pump station will come in there and be pumped over plant too. So.
Anything you can do to upgrade that odor control? Well, the fragrance.
The fragrance.
Just out of curiosity, Bob, where do you smell it?
Fairway 15.
You did that in 15 at October
something. Oh, really?
Every day.
See, I'm not that far from there, and it doesn't get all the way over to me.
Because we went to go east west, not north south.
That T-box up there, it doesn't get any north, it's T-box 15. T-box 15 down to the green.
The penalty of success, gentlemen. In fact, if you have to be out there on that golf course, it just breaks my heart that you have to smell that. Well, I'm out there working my butt off, all right? It breaks my heart.
That's the only area that I've noticed. I've been all over the town.
I stood on every corner. Thank you, Bernie.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
It's especially bad when you're walking.
You're going to send me that picture.
It's especially bad when you're drinking.
Yeah. You got hung up.
Manager's reports.
Well, hold on. Manager's report.
Thank you. As Brian Miller works his way up to the podium, he's going to give the board a quick update on some of the county projects that we've been doing. Some of these projects were approved by the board many years ago. At least three of you sat on the board then. I'm not sure if Director Pease was on at the time. But some of these projects were held up due to the part transfer agreement. And the goal was to... have us manage those projects due to the high overhead costs of the county charges. The county has come back and said that there's too much money in some of these reserve accounts in the zones, and so they're asking us to move the projects forward, and they're managing some of these projects along with our assistants. And so Brian's going to give an update on those projects and where we are with those at this point in time. Yeah.
There are several projects going on right now. There are some maintenance programs, and there's a capital improvement project coming up. The capital improvement project is going to be at Slipper Park, and the three picnic areas are going to receive shade structures to provide shade. They're going to move the barbecues outside of the structures. The structures are tiered so that heat will vent through the top, but they are moving the barbecues out. There'll be all new furnishings provided in the park. We've actually started that process. All the existing benches and the ADA tables have been removed from the park. We have a report today for the new benches and the new trash recycle receptacles. I'm going to try to push a little bit harder on the community to start recycling more. A lot of our recyclers end up in the trash, so we're working on the program to separate the two. All the structures, the location of the structures is above the picnic areas, but all the structures are going to have, this is what the design looks like. They're two-tiered, so they vent. There'll be rock work at all the columns. The barbecue areas will be moved out. There'll be new ADA tables and picnic tables underneath them. There'll be electrical power provided. They're going to pick up from the existing pump house and provide electrical to all through the shade structures, which will be nice. There is no power at the park currently. The second phase of this project is solar lighting. The solar lighting isn't going to be installed right now. This is the locations of the solar lighting and the broadcast of how the light will be. We're trying to light up the park. I used to live on Cambridge, and my house backed up to the park and the school, and one of the problems there is you can't see anyone in there at night. You can hear them, but you can't see them. So we're going to provide some lighting. That'll probably be 2017. So that when the sheriff drives by, they can see if anyone's in the park. Might reduce the vandalism a little bit in there. This project is currently about 90% complete in the design phase. The county's going to put it out to bid end of January or February, and construction should start sometime in April.
We always handle that, if you hear it but can't see it, by just by strafing. You just don't worry about where the bullets go. You don't have to worry about it.
That's easier.
It's a challenge on it.
Is this being recorded?
Some other projects we're working on. We installed soccer goals. We actually did that in-house. As soon as we put them in, the kids were using them. I
love the photo with the shadow. The
balls. Like I say, I used to live right behind the park.
First capture.
And there's a lot of youth groups that go out to practice, but there are no goals for them. The goals are top of line. They're anchored into the ground. They're not an easy item to pick up and move.
Oh, they're permanent locked in?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes.
Are they permanently locked in?
Oh, we can move them, but there will be a maintenance crew moving them. It's not something that a youth group could go in and move.
Three guys that pick up their hand.
No, the crossbars on the top and the bottom are 300 pounds each. The goals weigh approximately, I'd say about 1,000 pounds, and they come in three pieces. So it's not something you can put
very substantial. Okay.
Yeah. Very
nice.
That's a great effort.
Well needed.
They were using some sort of temporary goals over at Cornell, and you think that'll, were they still doing that?
Yes, they are.
Yep. Will that, you think that'll drive more of that activity over to Slifer, where you have some of that little nice facility now?
Well, there are a lot more younger families over in that area, so I think it'll be used a lot more than Cornell.
Okay.
Can't wait to have bathrooms there.
Yeah, it's a great addition. The cost wasn't that high, and the benefit is going to be really great. Another project we started at Borgata Park is the upgrading of the softball field. The posts for the new fencing for dugouts were installed. They're going to skin the backstop, install wood at the lower half, and reskin, and then they'll put in the fencing. They're going to put in the team benches. The second phase of this, we want to remove the existing turf and actually put in the infield mix and create an actual softball field and put in bases. I'm battling with the county right now to release some funds. There's more funds available in Zone 61 than there is in 57. So we might do some of it in-house and go from there. We're also doing new furniture at Slifer Park, additional benches, new tables, more tables for picnics, and we're putting in new receptacles for recycling and trash, and also the dog stations at both parks.
Dog station.
Yeah. And then we've also started some work here at the community center, some smaller projects. We're fencing off and making a storage area for the existing garbage units here. We've removed the structure over the pool that was unsafe and shored up the current structure. We're working on possibility of redoing the lights out front. That would probably be an in-house project. We're trying to do some of the work in-house, and then some of the work will have to be contracted.
But what lights out front?
We're doing a combination of work.
Somebody just unlocked my car.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll have some more pictures as we progress through the process too.
And that'll raise the property value. Nice amenities, thank you.
Yeah, and give the people something to do out here. Yeah, the kids especially.
All right, yeah, moving on. General manager's report.
My only report is Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I want to remind the board that we are closed. The district offices are closed. The community center will remain open. We'll be closed only Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day. The district offices are closed from December 24th, reopening on January the 4th. So we'll be gone during that period. Veolia will be here covering anything, and in the event of any emergency, obviously, we'll all be called back. So. So I remind the board of that, and Merry Christmas to you and your families.
And likewise.
Council, good evening.
Good evening. I will say the same thing. Happy holidays to all, everyone, and enjoy.
Thank you.
Any committee updates?
Yeah, we did. We had a right. Mark's meeting today, and we've got a lot of things. We previewed the new pipeline that's going out for the 2016 season and also all of the programs that will be offered. There are a couple of changes.
I'll be bored.
I think overall what I observed, we've got a little bit of an upgrade. We keep making major progress on the content and the look and the feel of it, so I think the residents will really appreciate it. And then we were updated as Brian's report today on the different projects going on in the park. And they're going to be putting together a wish list of items that possibly some of the PG&E money can be allocated to, so the board will have some input on where we might want to spend some of the funds.
I attended the LAPCA meeting and the Byron Union School District meeting last week. In the LAPCA meeting, there's five members that are expiring this year, and there's going to be one special district seat available. The Byron Union School District presidents and vice presidents, and the assignments were set for 2016, and Joe Sprinkle will be the president, and Betty Sanchez will be the vice president. Moving on, next item, any correspondence? Do I hear any public records requests? Any future agenda items? Okay, well, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everyone, and I'll
And thank you again for the order.
Yep. Happy Holidays.